everyone, and welcome to the Persuasion Call this week. My name is Kurt Mortensen, and today is October 21st. Welcome to the call, whether you're doing live or replay. We're going to answer your questions just so everyone knows about the format. For those that are new to the call, we're going to spend 10, 15 minutes talking about a principle of persuasion, influence, self-motivation, whatever it is. And then we'll take questions about things you're running into or about today's call and make sure we get your questions answered and just spend the next few minutes together. That way you have something fresh in your mind that you can apply this week. If you've been with us the last couple of weeks, we've been talking quite a bit about the five C's of trust. To review, we've talked about character. We've talked about competence. We've talked about confidence last week. And today we're going to talk about the big dad. There's one you need to do. This is a big, big piece of your success. So when I polled people to see, okay, out of the five C's of trust, which one was the most important, 44% said credibility. And that's what we're going to focus on today is credibility. How do you get credibility? How do you get instant credibility? How do you borrow credibility? And despite how important it was, people only 11% of the time felt they had credibility. And that's a pretty low rating. Now, it's obviously harder to get credibility now than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, because consumers are more sophisticated than ever before. They're more cynical. They've been through exaggeration. They've been through hype. And people have been burned in the past. That's just how it is. And so there are a couple things that are happening here. 20 years ago, people were exposed to about 2,000 persuasive messages a day. Now it's up to 5,000 persuasive messages a day. And, of course, people are more educated than ever before, too, meaning they have access to more information. 20 years ago, when you went to buy a car, you had to believe the person. Now you go to the Internet. You can find anything you want. Consumer Reports, you can find out any of this information that will help you out as a consumer, and you just can't pull the wool over people's eyes as you did in the past. That is a huge difference. And then, again, credibility and trust is at an all-time low. So let's talk about some solutions. So you have to be careful on how you explain and exhibit your credibility. Now, here's the challenge, and this is tough. Even, for example, if I'm giving a three-day seminar or whatever it is, I want to have credibility, but if I start off with a laundry list of my books and accomplishments and CD programs, all those things, I'll come across as a braggart. You know, titles, education, all those things, you'll be perceived as self-centered. And so sometimes you have to take advantage of a less direct approach, because it's a kind of a catch-22. If you don't tell them about these things, you have no credibility, but if you tell them about these things in the wrong way, you come across as kind of a braggart. And there's a couple things that you can do. You can, for example, if you want them to know about your degree, you could hang it on the wall. If you, better yet, having somebody else introduce you and bragging about you, that's okay. And that's an interesting thing. If I'm called to speak at a convention and I introduce myself, there wouldn't be a lot of credibility. But if I write up an introduction for somebody else to read in my words, then all of a sudden there's credibility there. And so that's important to understand because you need to have that expertise. So it could be something external they find out on their own. Another great way to do that is through a story. If you can tell a story about how you went to a certain university or got a degree, or a story about how you helped someone become more successful, those are external things. That's another way to get that credibility. Again, credibility is your being truthful, your history together, your experience. That is what credibility is. That's why it's so important. So if you think it's a challenge for you, you have to ask yourself, okay, what's your track record? Do you keep your word? Do you make an appointment? Are you there on time? Do you do what you promised? Are you reliable? Those are some big things. And here are the big complaints. If you want to know the complaints, it's about lack of credibility. Again, this is the biggest one out of all of five C's. When people are calling to complain, that is a huge credibility issue because very few people will call and complain. Most people, when they're offended or didn't like the food at a restaurant or they didn't like a person, they'll just never go back. So if somebody's calling, there's probably more people out there. Maybe they're not giving you repeat business. Maybe they're not loyal. If somebody's always needing references, ding, 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 hello, red flag, that is a huge credibility issue. Because when you're the expert and you have credibility, they should need references. Not that that's going to happen 100% of the time, but if it's happening every time, that's a red flag for you. Maybe they never return your calls. Maybe they cancel your appointment. Those are all different aspects. So one of the keys here is the way you present yourself. To present yourself in a calm, organized, you know, authoritative manner. Because when you become overly emotional, easily flustered, that throws your credibility out the window. When you look at successful attorneys or CEOs, doesn't matter how rushed or pressured they are, they don't run into a room, they don't slam their stuff on the table, they don't open up their briefcase and throw papers around. They are composed at all times, no matter what they're feeling inside. And that's a big part of credibility. Okay? That's because they always need to convey that air of authority and control. In fact, when they do studies with lawyers and juries, show that lawyers who appear well-organized are thought of as being more thorough, better prepared than those who are disorganized, and of course that increases their credibility. So a couple things here I want to point out. Issue number one, if you're going into a real estate situation or any type of situation, I guess let me ask you this question. Do you think it's okay to borrow credibility? What do you guys think?
Absolutely.
If you don't have any, borrow it. There are a number of ways to do that. You can use testimonials, you can use the person that's mentoring you, you can use a big name they recognize. And I mentioned some of this to you when I came out with my first book. I was a first-time author, so not a lot of credibility necessarily there. So I went to a bookstore and I watched people at the bookstore to see what they did. And it was interesting. They'd pull a book out, they'd look at the front, and they wouldn't open it up, they'd look at the back. And what they were looking for were the endorsements. So in my very first book, I made sure I got Stephen Covey of 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I got Brian Tracy, Robert Allen, Mark Victor Hansen of Chicken Soup for the Soul. So if you like Stephen Covey, then I'm borrowing credibility. That's enough for people to buy the book. And you can do that, again, with endorsements, with testimonials, dropping a name, talking about a neighbor you helped, an organization that you've worked for. Anything you can drop, you can definitely borrow credibility, and that's okay. So if you're going to a situation with zero credibility, it's okay to borrow it. That is number one lesson today. The second lesson that's very, very important, and this is a huge shift, okay, huge shift, and this will actually shock many of you, is people are so skeptical. Okay, you knew that. People are so skeptical. So when you're talking to them for the first time, it doesn't matter what business you're in, and this is especially true in real estate, when you're talking to someone for the first time and trust is low and credibility is low, what's happening is they're looking for something that's wrong. They're looking for a weakness either in you or your product or service. Because, I've coached people before, that, for example, they have an internet offer, and sometimes it's just too much stuff. It's too good to be true. We've had to take stuff out to make it more believable. So we actually made the offer worse, and it sold more. So what does that mean to you? Everything. Let me repeat that. When you meet someone for the first time, they're looking for a weakness either in you or your product or service. Now, here's the kicker. If you don't give them a weakness, they will assign a weakness to you. So here's the beautiful thing. When you can give them a weakness, it increases your credibility, increases your trust when you do it the wrong way. Obviously, if you're going to reveal that you're an axe murderer or you don't know what you're doing, that would be a bad thing. Your goal here is to reveal a weakness, turn that weakness into a strength, and it increases your credibility. Let me give you some examples. Let's talk about marketing. I've done a lot of research on advertising and marketing. Avis Rent-A-Car. Okay, here's their slogan. We're number two, weakness, but we try harder, strength. So they took a weakness, they revealed it, increases credibility, they turn it into a strength. Listerine. We know it tastes nasty. They don't hide that it tastes nasty, and here's their slogan. The taste you hate twice a day. It's a weakness. Twice a day kills germs. L'Oreal, it's expensive makeup. They don't hide the fact that it's expensive. They reveal it. And here's they say it's expensive, and then they say, here's they turn into a strength, because I'm worth it. Here's a fun one. VW in the 60s when they came out with the Bug, here's their slogan. VW will stay ugly longer. Okay, another one was, this car's so slow, you'll never get a speeding ticket. Another one, Smuckers. That's a terrible name for a jam. But they admit it, and they say with a name like this, it's got to be good. Heinz Ketchup. They're getting calls. It's too thick, takes too long, it doesn't pour out. Would you fix it? No, they reveal it. Here's the weakness. It does take forever, but that's a sign of quality. It's worth the wait. Have a little anticipation. So let's take this to your world. Let's say you are doing real estate, and you're talking to somebody, and you know they are talking to a 50-person corporation, and they're talking to you, a one-person company. Now, a lot of people will try to cover that up. They're going to find out eventually, reveal it, increase your credibility, increase your trust, and turn it into a strength. So you'd say something like this. Hey, I know you're talking to XYZ Corporation. I know they're big. And I know you're talking to me, and it's just me. I'm a one-person organization. But you know what? You won't get lost in the cracks. I work on the weekends, and they don't. You won't work with five different people. You're only working with me. And this is the main project I'm working on, and I'm going to work on this until we make it happen. Reveal it. You turn it into a strength. That's a powerful, powerful thing. So that is a big shift in the world of persuasion. We're always nervous to reveal something, but reveal it, turn it into a strength that increases your credibility and goes a long, long way for your success. Because trustworthiness increases when you're big enough to own up to your mistakes and your weaknesses. People can forgive a weakness, but they're not very quick to forgive a cover-up or something you admit or something you don't say. See, a lot of times a persuader, when they reveal a weakness about a product or about anything, it reveals honesty, and people like that. It increases your credibility. Because if you're only hearing positive things, that loses credibility. And you've been in that situation before, a timeshare presentation or something, you're just hearing the positive, and they never reveal the negative, and that hurts the trust. Because I've analyzed thousands of different offers, and the common theme when it doesn't sell is too good to be true. Even though they're legit, even though they're a great deal, it's all about perception. Because another thing that can really destroy your credibility is lying. Because most persuaders think that since no one's caught them or called them on a lie, then they're getting away with it. But people sense it. They record it. They don't call you on it. They just don't come back, or they say things like, too expensive, send me more information, talk to my partner. They sense it. Whatever it is, you have to be very careful. It decreases your trustworthiness. And a big challenge here, too, is understanding that a confused mind says no. When people are confused or you give them too much information, that can also decrease your credibility. Get them involved as much as possible. This is the big one. Out of all the five C's of trust. Now, you want to add as many as possible, but if you were going to only work on one, credibility is important. So let me give you a few things that you can start working on, give you a homework assignment, and then we'll open it up for questions and make sure that you are on track and ready to grow. So, big one here I mentioned is the way you reveal your qualifications or who you're working with or who you're mentoring with. Do it in such a way in a story, and so you don't come across as a bragger. Have somebody else introduce you and let them know how good you are and how you're an expert and what you do. Another one is credibility is enhanced with every minute of preparation. And this is what we teach in negotiation. In negotiation, you're either going to pay with your preparation time or lost money on the back end. Be prepared. Great persuaders, they never wing it. They don't leave things to chance. That's important. An important part here, too, is how you handle questions you don't know the answer to. If they expect you to know the answer, you would never, ever, ever say, I don't know. You would say, well, let me get back to you. I'll email that information to you. I'll get back to you. Let me get with my team, make sure I have the right answer. You can say it in such a way to where you save face and it doesn't hurt you. Another one is how you look. Remember, they're judging you in the first 30 seconds. Do you look credible? Eye contact is an indicator of credibility. How you look. Also, the ability to borrow credibility we talked about. Now, here's an interesting one, too. I'll just spend a few seconds on. Is never badmouth the competition. That does hurt your credibility. And that's a tough one for a lot of people. When you demean or say something negative about the competition, you have to be very, very careful. I remember watching somebody shop for a mattress and they demeaned the competition. Oh, you don't want to buy that. And they didn't buy from either one of them. Now, here's the hard thing. If they're talking to somebody that you know is no good, that you know will take advantage of them, what do? Well, the answer is this. You provide a way for them to find out on their own. Maybe talk to a testimonial or to look something up. That is the best way to do that. Another way to increase your credibility is facts, figures, statistics. That's another way of borrowing credibility is here are the numbers, here's what the facts show, here are the figures, this is what the market shows, here are my comps. That's another way to get credibility. And then the one we've talked about already is turning a weakness into a strength. Now, one last thing with statistics before we open it up to questions is be very sparingly with your statistics. Always let them know where it's coming from, because most people, if they've ever taken any class on statistics, know you can pretty much prove anything with statistics, but let them know where it came from, especially with analytical types. Statistics, numbers, facts are very, very important. So this is what I want you to work on this week, okay? I want you to find a way to reveal a weakness and turn it into a strength. So what is the biggest thing that's bothering you, the biggest objection you get? Whatever it is, find some type of weakness. Remember, they are looking for one, and if you don't give them one, they will assign one to you. What weakness do you have? How can you reveal it? And how can you turn it into a strength? That's what I want you to work on this week. That's what I practice. A simple thing, but it goes a long way in dramatically increasing your ability to get that trust. Credibility is a huge piece on trust. So that's what I want you to work on. That being said, let's open it up. Are there any questions of what we talked about today or maybe things that you're running into? My brain is yours. Who's got a question?
This is Jeff in Chicago.
Jeff, go ahead.
You were talking about finding a weakness or revealing a weakness and turning it into a strength. I had briefly asked you about this last week when we talked about most of my calls are to strangers, you know, basically cold calling for sale by owners. So because the lease options that I'm doing tend to use a lot of people, I'm trying to think of a good weakness that I can reveal that I can run around to make that strength.
Good weakness to reveal. Well, one way to get credibility, of course, is to when you start doing more business, revealing that, you know, 82% of the people that you work with, you and you can fill in the blank there. What do you think in their mind is one of their biggest weaknesses that might scare them?
I'm a stranger. I could be trying to cheat them, steal from them.
Chad, that could be a weakness. How could you? Is that one? Now, remember, just because it's a weakness, you might not always want to reveal it. Is that a weakness you could turn into a strength?
Well, they don't know me, so with time, you know, after my first 30 seconds, they might be more willing, but the first 30 seconds, as you say, are key.
They are key, and it might be something you could turn to a strength, something like, you know, I just say, you know, I know you don't know me, but that's a good thing, because when you're dealing with a, let's say foreclosures on this one. I know you said for sale by owner. But when you're dealing with foreclosure, a lot of times it's easier to work with somebody that you don't personally know because this is a very sensitive emotional issue.
That makes sense.
So that would work for a foreclosure, for sale by owner. What could be another potential weakness in their mind?
Confusion, because they don't really understand what a lease option is all about.
Okay. So maybe you reveal it that I want to let you know about a lease option, and this is also called inoculation, and it confuses a lot of people. And so you said, there you revealed the weakness, it's confusing, and people don't know what it is. But then the great thing is when I explain it and people understand it, the little light bulb comes on and they realize that now they can, you know, take care of their home or they can move, and you can fill in the blank there to where they do it. Because that's a big part of persuasion, too. We're noticing that great persuaders will solve objections before they happen. The old model, the old mindset of, oh, objections are good, they indicate interest, is false. I mean, there's a time and place for that, but if you can solve the objection before they happen, that is power persuasion right there, because the moment they have an objection in their mind and you keep talking, they haven't heard a word you said. So if you keep getting the same objections, what you want to do is learn how to solve it before it even comes up.
That sounds good, sir. Right. Thank you.
Yep. All right, you bet. Next question.
It's Dr. Cook from Park City.
Hey, Park, go ahead.
I was wondering about solving objections and if there's a particular way to do that.
There is. Let's get you a formula for that. I think that the big thing to understand before we do that is understand that first case scenario, you want to solve objections before they happen. Okay, that's number one.
Okay.
Number two, you need to understand, and this is latest research to help you understand this, is when you start getting out there and talking to a lot of people, what we're noticing is that the objection that you get the most is the objection you still have. And this is hard for people to understand. Basically, what I'm saying is if you keep getting the same objections over and over again, what that's meaning is you still have that objection. Here's the example. If you keep getting it's too expensive, what that means is in your heart you do not believe it's worth it. So we need to be careful. So with that put aside, let's say it's a true objection. Let me give you a formula on how that works. The first thing you want to do is ask yourself, can you solve it? If the bank is coming in tomorrow to take their house, you might not have enough time to do that. If you're doing a network marketing company and they've just gone bankrupt, whatever it is, you can't solve it. So the first thing is, can you solve the objection?
Yeah.
That's number one. Now, part of that is understanding, is this a true objection or knee-jerk objection? You have to remember that 66% of the time when they say it's too expensive, can't afford it, they're lying to you. And so a lot of times you want to ask them a question. Here's a good example. If they say, well, I need to think about it. Okay, and sometimes that's true, but most of the times that's false. And so you need to be ready with the question. So you would say something like this. Great. What exactly do you need to think about? And here's the moment of truth. When they say, well, I need to think about everything. Everything I need to think about. What is that telling you?
General.
It's general, and they're lying to you. That's not the true objection.
Yeah.
But if they say something like, the terms or the move-in date or the interest rate, you know exactly what it is, and that's still powerful information as a persuader. So first of all, can you solve it? Now, the big key here, too, is the next one is let them finish. A lot of times you will be put in the cocky, arrogant, condescending category. I know you don't mean it. Here's the thing. Is you're out there and you've talked to enough people that when you hear an objection, you get excited because you know the answer. And you cut them off because you have the answer. Put yourself in their shoes. This is the first time they've ever voiced this objection. You need to let them finish. Okay? Because that's very important. Even though you know the answer, let them finish. Then you restate. So what you're saying is, because a lot of times people just don't know what the true objection is. So what you're saying is the 90 days we've talked about, and you fill in the blank, and they say, well, no, it's more this. So restate it. And here's another big key. Always compliment them. You say, thank you for asking that. What a great question. Because you've been in college classes before, any class before, where everyone's afraid to ask a question. Nobody wants to look stupid. A lot of people won't ask questions because they don't want to look stupid, especially in real estate. There are a lot of terms and things they don't understand. So it's your job as a persuader to say, thank you. Thanks for asking that. So you're leaving the door open for more questions or more objections in the future. So compliment them. Thank them on it. Thanks for asking that. I appreciate that. And then key here is don't be condescending. And you probably don't mean to, it's just how you answer it, how you come across it. You don't want to make them feel stupid. And here's the key as a persuader. You're checking your ego in at the door. It's not about you, it's about them. So one way of not being condescending is, again, you're taking and saying, wow, thanks for asking that. That's my fault. I should have explained that a little bit better. And so, again, you're complimenting and you're helping them save face. I didn't understand that the first time either, or I should explain that better. Thank you for asking that question. Always give them room to save face. And if all those things line up, then you come across as sincere and genuine as a consultant. You have more credibility. But that is your main formula right there is, you know, can you solve it? Let them finish, restating, always compliment, and don't be condescending. It goes a long way.
So the essential thing is to acknowledge responsibility for it?
Yeah, that's one of the main things is you're saving their ego. And that what that does, too, just like complimenting, is you're keeping the door open. Because the moment they feel stupid, the door is closed to persuasion and influence, and so you want to keep that open, that you like the questions, you enjoy the questions, it's okay to ask the question. And when you can do it that way, then having a great response works very, very well.
That's good.
All right. Good. Yeah, that was a great question.
That should do that. That should get me through it.
Good. That's what we like to hear. All right. Any other questions out there?
Yeah, Kirk, this is Roger in D.C.
Yeah, Roger, go ahead.
I got a couple things. First of all, let's go back to your statement. Shortly after you started, you made a statement about references, and I wasn't quite sure, other than the fact that you said that if somebody expects you to know something, rather than saying, I don't know, I'll email it to you or something, but I'm not sure. That was exactly what you were talking about when you were talking about references, about using references sparingly. Did I hear that correctly?
No, I said use statistics sparingly.
Right, statistics. That was a little bit later on.
Yeah, references are ways to borrow credibility. Okay, that's always a testimonial or somebody that, you know, you've taken a picture in front of their home or whatever it is. That's always powerful. That you can't have too many testimonials or references. Obviously, you want to put some type of thing together, whether it's a website or something that they can look at. If you even had a three-ring binder of somebody's picture in front of a home and something they wrote out about how you helped them save their home or whatever it is, that's always very beneficial. Now, to the I don't know thing, when somebody asks you a question and you sense that they expect you to know the answer, that's why, as a persuader, you never, never want to say, I don't know. Now, on the flip side, I don't want you to lie either, but you don't want to say, I don't know. You would say something like, that's a great question. Let me get with my team and make sure I got all my numbers right, and I'll email that to you. Or, that's a great question. It's kind of taking us off course. Let me get with you tomorrow on that. Ways you can postpone it and save face. Or, you know, that's we'll get to that in a little bit. Let's focus on what we're doing now, and then at the end of the conversation, let them know you're going to address that or send information or talk to your team. That way, you're not saying, I don't know. But put it this way. Sometimes you might want to say, I don't know. If it's way out there, you say, I don't know, but I'm going to find out. I'm just talking about the times where they expect you, as the expert, to know the answer, where you kind of buffer that and it doesn't hurt your credibility.
My background, I was a medical professor, and with my medical students, the way I used to handle that in front of a class when somebody would ask is you know, I really don't know the answer to that, but that's a great question. I'll tell you what, I'm going to look that up, and next time we meet, I'm going to let you know, and that way we'll both have learned something.
And that's a great way, especially when it's one of those questions that's out there. Another way is to throw it back to the person asking, especially in a classroom situation. Well, that's a great question. What do you think? Or if you have a large classroom, one that I've used before is, well, that's a great one. Let's get with the break and talk about it. At the break, you're like, I don't know. But you're doing it to one person instead of the whole class. That's always an option, too. But if there are times where I don't know is the correct answer. It depends on the situation.
Just to wrap this part up, I think well, I've got this question marked out is where I am the authority, and I guess I was confusing that with I'm the authority, so I don't want to bring in other reference material. But I think what you're talking about with references is more testimonial. Is that correct? Maybe that's how I'm the misunderstanding I had.
Yeah, that would be exactly. It'd be testimonials would probably be a better way to put that. Those are things you always want to collect. And just a footnote on that is, you know, get those. And it's okay to write testimonials for people to say, hey, this is my experience together. Is this correct? Have them look at it. They might change a few words, make it as easy as possible. The testimonials is a great way to borrow credibility.
I'm trying to be sensitive to that because that's sort of one of my weak areas, I think, that with my particular I'm going to talk to you about something. I'm going to drag out the histograms and give you more data that you really want to know about. And, you know, really, I got to realize that most people don't want that kind of stuff. But anyway, let me get, I don't want to take up all the time here. Let's get into the second question I had, or comment that I had about identifying a weakness and then turning it into a strength. Again, my background is as a medical professor, and, you know, here I find myself, or I have chosen, I don't find myself, I've chosen to put myself into business situations. And, you know, would it be a reasonable weakness, say, you know, here my background is medicine and not really business. On the one hand, because you've said that, you've already established your credentials that, my gosh, if he's in medicine, he must have been doing something. You know, especially if I'm talking about my class, my students, you know, indirectly, tangentially. And then kind of use that as a weakness that is becoming a strength in business. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think you're on the right track there. You might want to realize, you know, I'm a medical professor. I've been in the medical field for this long. Getting into business. And the great thing about that is that you're revealing a weakness, but then the strength there is when you reveal it, they know that you've been to school. They know that you've got to be pretty smart. They know that you've had success. And so you can turn that into a strength in such a way as, you know, I've been successful in this, I've been in the medical community, but you know, maybe you could say it wasn't paying as much as I wanted, or it was more stressful than I wanted. If it was somebody practicing, it might be, you know, I was tired of the malpractice insurance and so on. Now I'm focusing on this. I'm all about the systems. I'm teaching these people how to do it. It's amazingly similar to the medical community, maybe because of this, and this, and maybe create something there. But the great thing about that weakness is it does reveal that, you know, you're smart, you've been persistent, you know different things that maybe could help them in the business world.
So, you know, the way I use that is to point out that there's not that much difference from what I was doing in the past with medicine. I was able to help a lot of people, but with my businesses and, you know, what I'm doing right now, I'm going to be able to help a heck of a lot more people. So there's a common thread that's running through, even though one is medicine and the other is business.
Exactly. You're on the right track. I like that. I like that. That's good. Good question. All right. So any other questions out there?
Yeah, sure. I have one more for you, Kurt.
Okay, go ahead.
When you were talking about testimonials, one thought has occurred to me. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm wondering, what is the proper way to go about getting testimonials from people on LinkedIn?
Well, the biggest thing is just to ask. The two things here is to ask. Well, three things. Let people know ahead of time when you're doing things that you expect a testimonial, when you exceed their expectations. When you ask for it, make it as easy as possible. That could be as something as writing, like I mentioned, writing it down yourself and running it by them and posting it yourself if you're able to do that. Another way would be if you're talking to them face-to-face, pull out your digital camera that takes video and say, hey, do this. Now, the key here is asking the right questions people are concerned about. You know, how much money they made, how much money they saved, their experience with you, how you maybe saved their home. Because I've received some incredible testimonials, but I can't use them because they don't say anything. I mean, it's great about me and how much people liked me, but as far as people are more concerned about, am I similar to this person? Can they help me save money? Are they going to help me save my home? Those are the type of things. So it's okay to coach them on what you're looking for. It's okay to write it for them as long as they endorse it. Maybe it's something you want to post yourself. And if you do something like that, the more information you can include, the more believable it is. What I'm saying is the first, if you can get a middle name or middle initial, that's more believable. If you can get a picture, that's more believable. If you can get where they're from, that's more believable. So the more information they let you include, the more believable that testimony becomes.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Okay. You bet.
Hi, Kurt, this is Mark in New Jersey.
Mark, go ahead.
I'm not quite sure that I understand exactly what the statement was about. When you're getting when you're getting out there and you're getting the objections, if you're getting the same objection, you still have it. I got everything down, I think, you know, with regard to the questions that you would, you know, normally go through. Can you solve that problem? You know, always let them finish, always, you know, compliment them and thank them for asking the question and all that, and then, you know, go about saving their ego. But I must not have gotten where it is that you actually, how you actually solve that problem. If you're still getting the objection, you still have it.
All right, let me explain that a little bit more. Basically, what we're finding is we monitor, you know, two persuaders, same script, same leads, same basically the persuasion IQ, and we notice is that independently they're getting different objections. They're both getting the same objection the most, but they're different. What we're finding is that somehow, if you don't believe in your product or service, or if you don't believe it's worth it, you're somehow manifesting the objection that scares you the most. You're manifesting the objection that you still have. The example I used was, if you keep, for example, this is a big one with network marketers, if you keep getting, well, it's too expensive, it's too expensive, it's too expensive, what we're finding out most of the time is that deep down, this person doesn't feel it's worth the investment. Okay? They don't feel that it's worth that money, and so they've got to come to grips with themselves that it is worth it, that it's worth $1,000 or $2,000 or whatever it is, that they can make, you know, $2 million with that investment if they'll do that. So I'm just putting it out there to where if you tend to get the same ones over and over again, somehow you're manifesting. It might be the objection you scare the most, that scares you the most because you're not sure how to handle it, but it could also be something, too, that you really don't believe about your product or about your service, and it's the one that keeps coming up time and time again.
Got it. Okay.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
Does that help you?
I didn't get it all written down, I guess, and I thought.
No, that's okay. I breezed over that pretty quick. But that is just something for you to be aware of too, that could really help you out.
I have one other question. If nobody has something right away.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'm very new at the marketing portion of this. Just trying to market basically for other other investors, other buyers, and I'm putting stuff out on Craigslist, and I'm not getting so many quote unquote objections, but I'm not getting a whole lot of response. So, where do you think with regard to the copy? How do I best alleviate, or how do I go about getting better response?
And that's the key thing with any marketing or advertising is testing it, tweaking it for your area to see, you know, when I change this word, I did this, I'm getting a 12% response, or I've got, you know, 10 call-ins or 5 call-ins. Big thing with that, too, is you look in your area, probably take a look at the classifieds, maybe the Sunday classifieds in the real estate section, and kind of benchmark what's out there. When you're able to go to Craigslist or to a classified, online classified or to the newspaper, you're going to see the same ads week after week after week. I don't know if you've noticed that or not.
Yeah.
And your goal as a great persuader is start benchmarking. What are the same terms? You pick three or four you see time and time again. What that's telling you is those are working in your area. And so if you can find three or four that you're seeing time and time again and adjust it and take the words that you think are working and make it your own, you know, copy it word for word, but make it your own, then I think you're going to see a great success. And then maybe the next week you're going to adjust a little bit and you just keep track. It's important to keep track of, well, this got 10 call-ins, this got 15 call-ins. And every time you fine-tune it, every time you benchmark something, then you're going to find the one that really works the best in your area that gets the most people to call in. But I think that's the best assignment is start benchmarking. Go through Craigslist for the past 2 months. Go through some older Sunday papers or get two or three Sunday papers together and see the ads that are exactly the same week after week, and that's telling you there's something there that's really pulling out that ad that you can benchmark from.
Great. Thank you so much.
You bet. All right. Any other questions out there?
Yes, Kurt, I have another question.
Go for it.
I have a property that just came up to me that's represented by a real estate agent, and my wife said that this is a distressed property, and but it's in our area, so it's really a high value area. But there must be questions that I can ask her that will get her to see that the value of the property may not be as high as she thinks it is. And I'm wondering what those questions are.
Well, if you've done your research, you know that that she's way out in left field. And a lot of agents are famous for, you know, putting the price very high so it gives them some room to negotiate. That might be the issue as far as
I have done some research. There's a comparable unit in the same area that wants about $45,000 more than what she's asking. So I'm just wondering if she's probably aware of that, and so she was cutting it below that. But it still seems...
She might be, you know, doing that to flip, but the best way to deal with a real estate agent, say, you know what, I pulled this comp and this comp and this, and based on my numbers, this is what it should be, and this is where you're at. Can you tell me how you got that number? The best question here is, can you tell me the standard you're using to get that number? Because my number is very different. And this is important to negotiate, especially real estate. If you're talking to, say, a for sale by owner, and you say, well, you're asking $250,000, can I ask you what standard you're using, how you got to that number? And if they say something like, well, I just know, you know they're pulling the number out of the air. But if they say something like, well, I did this, and I took this comp, and I've got an extra 2,000 square feet, or whatever it is, then you know they've done some research, and you got to kind of do the same thing with the real estate agent to gauge them, say, well, this is the number I found. I found this comp, and based on my research, this is the number I got. Can you tell me where you got to your number? And that's going to tell you a lot as far as if she did research or if she's just pulling the number out of the air.
Okay. Is it also fair to ask her how long it's been on the market?
Sure, you bet. Or if it's been on the market before, or if there's been similar type property she's represented. Yeah, you bet. All right. Any other questions out there?
Mr. Roger, again, D.C., could you just whiz by those five characteristics? I'm counting only four. I got character, competence, confidence, credibility. What's the fifth one I'm missing?
Oh, that's on a need-to-know basis. No, we'll be talking about that next week, which is congruence.
That's congruence, okay.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about congruence because that holds a lot of people back, because when your gestures don't match your words, people always read their gestures, so we'll focus on congruence next week.
Okay, great, thank you.
All right.
I'll tune in next
week. All right, yeah, we'll be here next week. We've gone a little over, but that's okay. We had some great questions. If you want to listen to some of the replays, it's persuasioniq.com/KurtCall, KurtCall. Again, persuasioniq.com/Kurt, KurtCall, KurtCall. If you want to review it or listen to some of the past classes. But do your homework this week. Find a weakness and turn to a strength. And if you have challenges with it, we can talk about that next week. Everyone have a great week, and we'll see you on next week's call. Good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Kurt,
love you, buddy.
Yeah.
Thanks.
All right, thanks. We'll see you.